welcome to the first official Woodward Financial Advisors podcast, complete with incredibly cheesy intro music that I can almost guarantee we will replace at some point in time. This is Ben Birkin from Woodward Financial Advisors, joined by Victor Colella at Woodward Financial Advisors. Victor, how you doing this afternoon? It is as of right now, it's 3 o'clock or so on Wednesday, April 15th.
I'm doing well. As well as can be expected in these troubling times, Ben.
I've started my own version of a drinking game that whenever I get an email that's wishing that I am well and staying safe, I'm taking a sip of something. And inevitably now at this point, I'm drunk by 10 o'clock in the morning.
And we're shooting this in the afternoon, so that bodes well.
That's right. Yeah. There's still a few more hours left to go in the business day. I'm just kidding. I'm not really doing a drinking game with all that. But it is astounding when you start to see all these emails that are coming in about the well-wishing and the safe and the washing of the hands and all that. It's a lot. And admittedly, people don't know what to say, so they're doing the best they can. But
yeah, I think everyone has their own greeting or sign-off related to the COVID-19 crisis. So now, there are worse parts of the whole pandemic. So we'll accept that one.
Very true. Very true. So as we said at the top, this is the first official Woodward Financial Advisors podcast, and related to the COVID-19 situation, we thought, given the timeliness of the legislation that just passed as of a couple of weeks ago, as of this recording, that we would spend our time today talking about the CARES Act, a huge piece of legislation, stimulus, relief, call it whatever you want. It's got far-reaching effects reaching into small business, personal finance, personal people, retirement accounts, all sorts of stuff. So because this has some tax-related things, we thought it would be important to do a disclaimer right at the beginning. Yep. So just for everybody's information, this podcast is for educational purposes only. We're not talking or offering any tax or investment-related advice. Individuals who are listening should contact their tax or investment advisors for items specific to their situations. Additionally, while I don't think this is going to happen this time, it's possible that we mention an investment or security that happens to be owned by clients of Woodward Financial Advisors. If we do, or if we talk about any other investment, that should not be interpreted or taken as advice or an offer or solicitation to purchase that security. So now that we have bored everybody away, let's get into it. So CARES Act, Victor, do you know what CARES stands for?
You would think that would have been part of my preparation for our discussion, but it wasn't. Spoiler.
It is the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, a $2 trillion emergency stimulus package. $2 trillion. That's more money than most folks make in a year.
Yeah, that number means nothing to me. It just is big.
It's absurd.
So I saw a few leading up to, or I guess over the past couple of weeks, trying to quantify a trillion of anything, and a trillion seconds takes us back to like George Washington's time or something like that. That's not accurate, but it was astounding nonetheless. So
all right, the disclaimer at the top cleared us of any
absolved us of any sins. Anyways, I guess I can start. And I think the basic trajectory of our discussion is going to be starting very broadly. So starting with what was the big picture of everything that made it into the Stimulus Act? And then I think we really want to zero in on a few things in the end that we spend most of our time talking details about. So I'll take a crack at that big picture, if that's all right, Ben.
That sounds great.
So when I tried to chunk things, I'm a big three buckets guy. So I tried to chunk all of what was in the act into three main categories. And really, to me, it broke up along these lines. So you have, like Ben said at the beginning, small business provisions. So of course, something like a pandemic that basically has frozen many parts of our economy, the smaller the business, the more vulnerable those companies are to sort of that freeze in economic activity. So there's a lot of resources. A big chunk of those trillions of dollars is going towards small business benefits. And those are coming in the form of, they're called Paycheck Protection Program loans, tax credits, payroll tax delays. And we're going to mention some resources towards the end of the podcast here that if you want to know more about something we're not focusing deeply on, but the goal there is to keep the doors open for an important part of our economy and really keep those small businesses from laying off even more workers. Now, the jury's out on whether that worked. It's now 2 weeks or so after this got passed, and every week unemployment is spiking tremendously. I don't remember the latest numbers, Ben. It's something like 6 million new applicants or something like that.
It's another one where you can't really wrap your head around the number.
Yeah. So not trying to gloss over it, because those are lives that are being impacted, but those small business impacts, it's basically making loans more available and trying to defray some of the cash costs that, at least in the near term, would cause people to have to be laid off. So that's the first bucket. The second bucket, where we're going to spend most of our time, are benefits for individuals. So individuals being, you're not a business, you're not a government, or a business, or you could be a business owner and still qualify as an individual. Most do. But these are benefits like you've heard perhaps unprecedented, but also widest reaching, are these rebate checks. So the government's going to write you a check. Maybe not a physical check. We'll talk about that. So recovery rebates are what they're calling. Some provisions have made it easier for folks to take loans or take distributions from their IRAs or employer plans where they may not have been eligible to do that in the past. Required minimum distributions we're going to talk about. So you may have needed to take a required distribution that now may not be so required. Some additional charitable deductions, relief for student loan borrowers. So 0% interest for a period of time, basically eliminating required payments for a period of time. Again, we'll mention more resources towards the bottom of the episode. And then last but certainly not least, especially considering those unemployment numbers that we referenced, unemployment benefits have been juiced. Some waiting periods have been taken. So there's typically a one-week waiting period. And they've been extended. So the duration's longer, the benefits are higher, and you don't have to wait the normal week that you might otherwise. So again, these are all important things. We're going to zero in on a few that we think our listeners are probably going to be more interested in. But there are other things, especially if you're on Medicare. One thing to mention is, for example, you can get more months' supply of medications now than you could have before to try and cut down on trips to the pharmacy, those sorts of things. So lots of little stuff in here, and a lot towards sort of just helping individuals who are affected.
Yeah. So, and I think to wrap that part up, within our circles, we get barraged almost daily now with emails about webinars and white papers and all sorts of resources to try to tackle some of this stuff. I think it's a 900-page act that came together incredibly quickly. So to try to address all those things in the span of a podcast would be madness. Yeah. So we thought that we'd spend most of our time talking about what we thought were the three areas that most of our particular clients are going to be impacted by. Again, that's not to diminish any other part of the act. There's so much going on here, but we wanted to spend our time with the three primary things that we thought most of our clients are going to be impacted by. And the first of those, I just call them the rebate checks, but they're officially called, what was it? The
recovery rebates. That's what I've been seeing them called most. Yeah.
And so these are going out pretty much potentially to everybody, right? Yeah. So every taxpayer, every person in the United States is technically eligible for these. That doesn't mean you're going to receive any money. You have the potential to receive money, and how much you receive and whether you receive anything is going to be based both on your family size as well as your income, right? So it's not just a blank check to everybody. So based on your tax filing status, for example, if you're a single filer, you only file your own taxes, you're eligible for up to $1,200. And Victor, you said check. It could be in the form of a check. It could be a direct deposit right into your bank account. And we'll talk about those mechanics in a little bit. If you're married filing jointly, you double that. So it's $2,400 for a married couple, regardless of your filing status, potentially also eligible to receive up to $500 per child listed as a dependent on your most recently filed tax return. So if you're married with two kids, you potentially have a $3,400 rebate check or deposit coming your way. And I say potentially because there's a little bit of income, I was going to say gaming, but that's not the right word, but phasing, I suppose, would be a better way of putting it. So depending on your filing status, if you're single and you made less than $75,000, or married and your income is less than $150,000, you get the whole enchilada, right? It's $1,200 or $2,400, respectively. If you make over $99,000 or $198,000 for single or married filing jointly, respectively, there's nothing, right? You've effectively phased out. The government says you've made too much money to be eligible for this. And if you're in between, there's a little bit of a phase out going on. I'm going to say what the phase out is and then say to do the math, do it on your own time because it's just too complicated for me to do on my own. But it's basically $5 for each $100 that you're over your limit, right? So it steadily decreases until you get to those income limits and you're phased out. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, Vic, and let's see how well we are in test time. How are we measuring income?
Yeah, so this income, I believe, is measured on AGI or adjusted gross income.
That's right.
Which is the
when.
Yeah, the when is, I was just going to go there. The when is a little confusing, I'll admit. And I think, you know, I wasn't in the room writing the laws and I'm thankful for that. But so it's based on your 2020 income. But when do we do our 2020 taxes, Ben?
2021.
So it's based on an unknown. And so the way that they're calculating this in an effort to get payments out now, not in 2021, because the payments are needed now, they're measuring it based off of your most recently filed tax return. So let's,
which could be as old as 2 years ago.
It could be 2018.
Right.
So if you haven't done your taxes for 2019 yet, it's going to be based on your 2018 numbers. If you have done your 2019 taxes, it'll be based on your 2019 numbers. And here's where it gets interesting. There's going to be a true up in 2021. So let's say, I guess there are a few different scenarios here. Let's say, and Ben, make sure I don't, for there are multiple scenarios, I'm going to make sure I don't leave one out. But let's say that you didn't qualify in 2018, but you lost your job in 2020. So the last time you filed taxes was in 2019 for 2018. You made too much money in 2018. It was a good year, as it was for a lot of people. Unemployment was very low. The problems that we have today were, you know, weren't even hatched in our minds yet. What do you get in 2020? What do you get right now?
Right now, you get nothing.
But in 2021, the government's going to do the calculation again based on your taxes, and you'll get that check. Maybe not when you need it most, but you'll be able to pay off some debts that perhaps you've accumulated in the meantime. Is that a fair way?
That's a fair way. And I don't even know if in the 2021, if it's actually going to be in the form of a check or if it's actually going to be in the form of a credit.
Yeah, I think it'll be a credit. But
it's going to be a credit.
I don't think we'll know that even until that starts to happen.
So it's possible with the scenario that you laid out, somebody could be eligible for nothing or they could be eligible for some sort of phased out amount. Yeah. The government will make that up on the back end. There's the other flip side, which is you didn't make anything in 2018 or 2019, but you ended up making, or maybe you made enough to qualify for a credit, but then you made so much in 2020 that you would have otherwise been phased out. Guess what? There's no clawback provision. So if your income is higher in 2020 than it was in either 2019 or 2018, the government's not going to come and say, we gave you too much, we're going to take it back. So that's a little interesting wrinkle. Something else to throw into this, which I admit I didn't put it into our shared document that we're looking at, but not part of this act, but the IRS pushed back the tax filing deadline to July, right? July, June, summer.
Yeah.
Which means you don't have to file your tax return as of technically the day that we're recording, right? This would have been tax day on April 15th.
Oh, wow. I didn't even observe tax day this year. Usually we have a party. Yeah.
But now there might be a strategic reason to file your tax return for 2019, even though you don't have to, if it means that you're going to get your rebate check of a higher amount faster. Well, so rather than waiting until later when the actual deadline is, you might be pushing your CPA to say, hey, I actually need that money now. Do my tax return now so that they're basing that check on my 2019 return.
Yeah. And some, especially when this first came out, which as of our recording is a couple of weeks ago, there were a lot of folks calling for, if you had a low income year in 2019 and you haven't done your taxes yet, do it now, e-file, so that when they do the calculation, and Ben, we were talking this morning, folks are actually starting to get these checks now. So maybe the ship has sailed, maybe it hasn't.
Don't know.
Probably do your taxes anyways. It's probably a good practice.
Yeah. I mean, my hope is that most folks who are working with good CPAs, the CPAs have been as on top of it as they could be, and maybe push some folks to the head of the line when they might not have otherwise needed to.
Sure.
Last little bit on this. How are those payments going to come? Well, if you're receiving Social Security, what's supposed to happen is that your rebate, because retirees are eligible for this too. You don't have to be working for the rebate checks. That should come with your next Social Security payment. When I say next, that's kind of as of this recording. So I don't know when, if you're listening to this, it might have already happened in the past. Many folks who are doing direct deposit for their refunds are going to get those rebates just deposited into the accounts that shows up on their most recent tax return. If folks aren't doing direct deposit for refunds, they should get a physical check mailed to them to their last known address, which brings up its own set of complications. What if you've moved? What if you've changed bank accounts? Above our pay grade at this point to go into some of those logistic challenges. Know that the IRS has attempted, I think, to set up a website or a phone number to call in case that applies to you.
Yeah. And I actually, before our discussion today, I was reading that the IRS recently launched a website called Get My Payment Tracker, aptly named.
It's subtle.
Yeah. Subtle. Right. Basically, the way that it works, I took a look at it. You have to input your Social Security number, your date of birth. By the way, Social Security number is a prerequisite to receiving these benefit checks. And you can't be a dependent if you're older than 16. So there are a couple roadblocks that the government put up. But you put in your Social Security number, your date of birth, your mailing address. And sometimes even there'll be an opportunity for you to put in your bank account information, which begs the question, what if when you filed your taxes in 2018, you were using a bank account that's now closed, or you lived in an address that you no longer live at. I think there's going to be some headaches as it relates, and there's a number to call, but there will probably be some issues tracking down lost payments. So check out that tracker if you're concerned, because maybe there's an opportunity to correct it before it happens.
Absolutely. So I think that's a good wrap up, again, high level for the rebate checks. But let's move on to the second one, which impacts, again, a lot of the folks that we work with who are retired, who have retirement accounts, either 401ks or IRAs, and are in the practice or might have just needed to start required minimum distributions. So setting the stage a little bit. Last year in December, there was some other seminal legislation that actually changed required minimum distributions. For the longest time, your first required minimum distribution, if you had an IRA or traditional IRA or traditional 401k, the year that you turned 70 and a half, you had to take out some amount. And it's a calculation based on the year-end balance and your age and the year of the distribution. But the first one has to happen the year you turn 70 and a half. Mm-hmm. Until the Secure Act passed late last year, which said, no, that's now age 72. So the year you turn 72 is your first required minimum distribution. And then along comes coronavirus and mucks everything up, because 2019 was a pretty good investment year. Great returns, you know, some of the best we'd seen in a few years. So account balances, particularly by the end of the year, were pretty high. Now we come into February and March, and markets were down at one point, 34%, 37% from the highs.
Yeah.
For stocks, for broad U.S. stocks, which wow, all of a sudden the amount that you have to take now on a reduced portfolio really scared a lot of people, and rightly so. So the CARES Act said, remember those required minimum distributions that you said you had to take? They're gone. You don't have to do that this year, which is similar to what happened in the Great Financial Crisis. At this point, I can't remember. I think it was 2008 that RMDs got waived. But we had a similar situation 10 or 11 years ago. So now if you are 72 or older, or if you have inherited an IRA or a 401k, because folks who inherit them, non-spouses who inherit an IRA or a 401k, have also needed to take out required minimum distributions. Yep. You don't have to. You can if you want to, but you don't have to take anything out this year, which is nice for some folks. Some folks, they were going to take it out anyway because it's the only resource they have. But for folks who didn't need to take it out, a little bit of a benefit, right? Money can stay inside the IRA. Don't have to worry about distributions until next year.
Yeah. And I think it's worth mentioning, to sort of underlining one thing that you said, that you still can if you need to. And that goes for just, you want to use the money in your account to pay your expenses maybe, but also for those folks who are doing their charitable giving from their IRAs, 401ks, other retirement accounts that you're referencing, if you choose to, and now there's a broader discussion as to whether or not that's the right thing to do. If you choose to, you can still do those qualified charitable distributions, well, which are QCD is how we typically shorten it. So still an option on the table.
Right. And we'll talk about that briefly. We can talk about it here. So a qualified charitable distribution, again, that can only come from an IRA. It can't come from a 401k. But that's where money can get sent directly from your IRA to a nonprofit, a 501c3. You don't get a charitable deduction for it, but it doesn't show up as income on your tax return. So in normal years, that can be a really nice way for some folks to satisfy their required minimum distribution if they didn't need the funds, or if they wanted to make donations that were effectively fully tax deductible because they'd be making those donations with pre-tax money. So just because RMDs are gone, if you're over 70 and a half, you can still do a qualified charitable distribution. There's just no need for it to count as part of your required minimum distribution, but you still can if you want to. So this brings up the question, because we have some folks in our practice where this applies to, we take out their required minimum distributions either in total or in part early in the year to provide for spending money for the first, 6 months of the year. Some folks take them out quarterly. Everybody's on a slightly different schedule. Most folks take them out in one lump sum towards the end of the year, but we have some folks who take things out a little bit early. So what happens if you already took money out because you didn't know this was coming? Nobody knew this was coming. Are you out of luck?
No. Well, maybe. Who maybe. Knows? Yeah, right. No. So, and I guess I'm sure I'm going right where you were going with, you have a couple of options to put the money back. One of the provisions of the CARES Act is the one that I can cover, and then there's a second that I can bounce it back to you. But it's called a coronavirus-related distribution. So one of the exceptions to the rule because of the pandemic that we're currently in was that if you are negatively affected by sort of a broad swath of ways that you could be affected by this pandemic, so it's called a coronavirus related distribution, then you're able to put that money back into your IRA, 401k, or whatever type of account over the next 3 years. So you could call it a, and you don't even have to be 70. We're talking about folks who have required minimum distributions, but this is possible for anyone if they qualify under the hardship provisions in the CARES Act. But if you're in the RMD situation and you qualify under the liberal definition of being negatively affected by coronavirus, you can put it back over the next 3 years and it's as if it didn't happen.
Right.
Which is a nice, if you forgot. Because I think initially when this rule got written, folks were concerned because this wasn't clear initially. I just took mine last week. What do you mean I can't put it back if I already did it? I'm the unluckiest person here, right? So it's sort of a nice provision that exists. And then, Ben, you've got the other.
Yeah. So the one that you mentioned, there's a little bit, I mean, it's a liberal definition, but there is a definition about what qualifies, right? So you need to, as an individual, either been diagnosed with COVID-19, have a spouse or dependent who's been diagnosed with it, experience adverse financial consequences as a result of being quarantined, furloughed, being laid off, or having work hours reduced because of the disease. That's probably going to be the one that's going to impact folks the most. Unable to work because you lack childcare as a result of the disease. Own a business that is closed or operated under reduced hours because of the disease, or meet some other reason that the IRS decides to say is okay, right? That's your catch-all. So, you know, most of this was targeted towards people who might have retirement accounts, probably not the RMD eligible folks, but people who their primary form of saving is to their retirement accounts. And those are challenging accounts to access. If you're under age 59 and a half, there's a penalty and they're taxable. And so what this act did was it waived the 10% early withdrawal penalty, which is nice. Technically, withdrawals are still taxable, but like you said, you have 3 years to maybe put the money back or to spread the income out over a 3-year time frame. So it's more of an interpretation of this part of the act that might allow somebody who took an RMD early in the year to maybe get it back in.
Yeah.
The other one, and with each passing day, we get this makes it harder and harder. Technically, anybody, if you take money out, you have 60 days to roll it over back into an IRA.
Sure.
Usually you're not allowed to do this with required minimum distributions, but because there are no required minimum distributions anymore, if you're within that 60-day window, you can put the money back in and just call it a rollover. You're allowed one of those a year. Again, folks who did this in January and now at this point, February, you're probably out of the window. Heard some chatter that they might retroactively let people put money back in, but that's not anywhere close to prime time yet.
Yeah. And the jury is still out for if you're an individual in the situation and you're listening, whether it makes sense for you to put it back or not, it's not a automatic, well, you took it out and now we should put it back in. If you need that money to live on and that's the only place it's going to come from,
tax consequences go out the door,
yeah,
right?
Fast forward to the next part of the podcast, right? Because this is not so much a relevant discussion, but if it's within the last 60 days, or let's say, I think the one of the provisions that you laid out, Ben, that was helpful, the one that I can see some retirees fitting into, let's say you were working a job to stay busy in retirement, and now you're not working it because, you know, pandemic risk, all that sort of thing, you've chosen not to work anymore, maybe you could squeeze in under the, you know, we're working, now you can't.
Yeah. So there's some creative things that some folks might be able to do. So it's not all is lost. But again, with each passing day, that 60-day window moves one day forward, it's just a little bit more challenging, for sure.
Yeah.
So we covered the rebate checks. We covered the waiver of required minimum distributions for 2020. Oh, I should have mentioned. I apologize. So we mentioned in this section that folks who have inherited IRAs, non-spouse beneficiaries, they also don't need to take a required minimum distribution. They can't roll over. They're not eligible for the 60-day rollover because you're not allowed to roll over money back into an inherited IRA. So for those folks, if you happen to take a distribution early in the year from an inherited IRA, it's
yours. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Then I think the last thing, and this is small but relevant to some folks, was that the CARES Act did put in a little provision for a charitable contribution, a deductible charitable contribution. And this was news to a lot of folks. I don't think people were expecting this. It's basically what's called an above-the-line charitable contribution. So above the line means that it reduces your total income before it gets to your adjusted gross income. So this is before any itemized deductions or anything like that, hence the above-the-line because it's referencing the line on your 1040 of your tax return.
Yeah, and the way that I simplify that one often is above-the-line means you don't have to itemize to take advantage of it. Below the line means you only get to take advantage of it if you itemize. And yeah, one of the three tax bills that came in the last few years, of course, you all probably remember, much fewer people are now itemizing because of that increased standard deduction. So above the line is especially valuable these days.
That's right, because it's just harder to itemize right now.
Yeah.
Yep. So now, having set it all up, this is not a huge deduction, right? This is a $300 above the line charitable contribution. So again, you're not eligible to do it if you do itemize. It can only be cash. So we sometimes talk to our clients about donating appreciated stocks, as there can sometimes be a tax benefit to doing that. In this case, it's got to be cash, and it's got to go directly to a charity. So it can't go to a donor advised fund, which is something that we've talked to some clients about in terms of their philanthropic efforts. But still, yeah, it's nice. So if you are making a cash contribution, last year we might have told you, if you weren't itemizing, don't worry about keeping track of it. This year, well, keep the receipt, because it might turn into a small charitable deduction for you.
Yeah, and I can see this one, the way that I think about this. I mean, even if you're in the highest tax bracket, I think this works out to be just over $100 of savings on your taxes.
Yep.
Small individual impact, but potentially across the 300 billion or 300 million. See, I'm all messed up with these trillions floating around. But across the United States, it may make a difference in some folks who need it. So, you know, it's just another thing.
Absolutely. So those were the three things that we wanted to at least highlight and spend extra time talking to folks about. But I think, Victor, you had a few other items of,
yeah,
I was going to say tangential importance. They're not. They're other parts of the act that folks might find interesting for their specific situations.
Yeah. And these are some are not, like you said, not that impactful, but they might be relevant. So one that I didn't mention before is that the definition of what you can spend your HSA, so health savings account, or flex spending account. So these are tax advantaged savings accounts that a lot of employers will offer that you can use to spend on healthcare expenses. And it's as if the income was never taxable. It's been expanded to include over-the-counter drugs and then some feminine products. So this is a change that got snuck in there, I think, by some of the legislators who made the law. But now you can, you know, use tax-free dollars to buy your ibuprofen or Tylenol or whatever. I don't want to definitely don't want to give medical advice.
We don't pick sides here on your
whatever your over-the-counter drugs of choice are. So that's one that might be just sort of a nice other thing to know about. I mentioned the Medicare. So whereas for some drugs, you may only have been able to buy a month supply in advance under Medicare, that's changed. You can now get 90 days. I think the fewer trips that we all make to the drugstore are probably a good thing, especially if you're older and perhaps in the more vulnerable population per the guidelines that I've heard. Another thing is if you have student loans, your children, your grandchildren, whoever have student loans that they're paying, two main things with student loans. It's 0% interest until this fall. I believe it's September 30th. And also, you're able to put your loans into forbearance, which means you don't have to make required payments. Now, the mechanics of doing that, I'm not going to speak to it because I don't want to misspeak. But there are additional resources on that at studentaid.gov. And there's a great Q&A section. I was glancing through it earlier. Really, it's sort of a nice resource, especially maybe you have the money to keep making student loan payments. Those are all going to go to principal now. That's one thing that I've been talking to a couple of friends about. So if you still have the means to pay, it's just not going towards interest, which is a good thing.
Yep. And I should say too, and we'll say it again, you know, some of the references or resources that you're talking about, we'll put these in our show notes at woodwardadvisors.com. Again, this will be episode one. But if you find the podcast on woodwardadvisors.com, we'll put a list of all the things that Victor's referencing.
Yeah, depending on where you're listening, the show notes may be in different places, but they'll be there. There was, by the way, up at the top of the episode, I said there are three main umbrellas. The third one, which I'm certainly not going to speak as an authority on, a big part of that $1 trillion was going towards the healthcare industry, helping with medical supplies, veteran care. I know there were a lot of VA benefits. So if you're a veteran, definitely check out the resources at the VA, because I know there were some additional benefits there that maybe not for individuals, but for the institutions that are providing the benefits. There's state and local governments. There are some airline $1,000, you know, for the airline and cargo industry. Really, the goal being to help keep the lights on and make sure we all can continue to hoard toilet paper or whatever it is that we're doing.
We do not advocate that.
I know I'm victimized by it, but I guess maybe we don't want to open that can of worms here.
That's correct.
Those are the main additional provisions that I think I wanted to mention. Am I leaving anything out? Oh, I had one other one, but am I leaving anything out? Probably.
It's 900 pages. I guarantee you we're leaving stuff out.
I'm so sure that you're correct, but one thing that I did see is that there's sort of an increase in prevalence of scams related to COVID-19. So a general rule of thumb that we share with our clients is that the government is never going to call you. They're never going to text you. Probably
they might not know how.
Yeah, they probably won't proactively communicate with you in any way, if I could guess. So if you get those calls, we see them a lot for Social Security recipients. We see them a lot during tax time. But unfortunately, the folks who administer these scams, there's nothing like a good crisis to help steal from people, which is unfortunate but true. So just be careful.
Yeah, I think that's a good place. I think it's a good thing to mention. It's probably a good place to wrap up on. So, you know, if any of these things apply specifically to you or you think that they do, we're available. You can email us info@woodwardadvisors.com. Again, if it's a specific thing related to tax, you'll want to talk to your tax preparer, CPA, about that. But I think for our first episode, we could have tackled something much simpler, but we bit the elephant in half, or we at least tried to. So, Victor, thank you so much for sharing these last 36 minutes with me.
It's been
appreciate
a pleasure.
It.
Yep, it's been a pleasure.
And we will talk to everybody next time. And I'm going to forego that outro music because I don't think it's necessary. But rest assured, we are spending minutes of time looking for the appropriate theme music for this podcast. Yeah, well, so thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Have a good one, Ben.